Hello and welcome to the BSP podcast. I've got here today Patrick O'Connor, who is senior lecturer in philosophy at NTU, it's Nottingham Trent University in the UK. He's published on Derrida with his book Derrida Profanations, and he's also written a book on Atheism Reclaimed, and has published on Phenomenology, Merleau-Ponty, Badiou, has also done a lot of film. You've recently had a film article published, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done some small works on film and bits and bobs, yeah.
Yeah, you've done some articles for Open Democracy on and The Conversation on political and sort of atheist, well, political atheism, I guess you could call it that from what your book argued. And you're the former treasurer and still a member of the executive of the society. And the reason you're here today is because of your recent work on Cormac McCarthy and the fact that we've got, or you're hosting a workshop on the work of Cormac McCarthy. So could you tell me a bit about, well, could tell us a bit about what this workshop's going to be about?
Right, so basically, as you said, I've been working on Cormac McCarthy's literature for the past while. I've published a few bits and bobs on him in a couple of different journals. And what I'm interested in is the intersection of sort of philosophy and literature, broadly. Okay. And Cormac McCarthy, as a writer, is also someone who's really interested in the intersection of philosophy and literature. I guess what brings me to that is because I would never, ever have said that Cormac McCarthy was like someone who did pure philosophy. I mean, he's always exists in that hinterland between philosophy, literature, but he does examine a lot of philosophical themes. I mean, he talks about violence, law, alienation, nihilism. There's a lot of very strong Nietzschean readings of his work. But this year, in March, April, he's released an a full philosophical article called The Kakula Problem in a popular science journal called Nautilus, which is very pretty, actually, I have to say.
Pretty.
It's a very pretty journal, yeah. And in that, he talks about the relationship between language, relationship between the unconscious, and the relationship between language and conscious, and sort of evolutionary theory. The workshop, then, will be kind of a small interdisciplinary gathering on trying to unpick what this article is about, trying to understand what specifically Cormac McCarthy is saying in it, because it's quite a dense article, but also trying to understand the consequences of that article for Cormac McCarthy's literature more broadly, and sort of questions of phenomenology of language.
Brilliant, and it's in Manchester on the 26th?
It's on Manchester on the 26th of July, venue to be confirmed. so that'll be on in Manchester on the 26th.
Brilliant. So could you say a little bit more about this essay on the Kakula problem? So I appreciate it's very, very new and philosophy is very slow. I wouldn't expect you to be able to give an immediate account, and as I have had a look at it myself, it is quite dense. So at the moment, where do you kind of stand on what McCarthy's trying to do, even if we can't necessarily say what his full argument is yet?
It seems to be a sort of a philosophical meditation on the origin of language.
Okay.
It starts basically with what is the Kakula problem is. It's basically a scientist, I think, or a mathematician who was trying to figure out a problem, and he went to sleep one night. He couldn't quite figure it out, and he saw the Ouroboros, you know, the snake swallowing his own tail, that sort of deep mythological symbol, and basically he woke up, and it was the unconscious who gave the reflective awareness the answer to the problem. So Man McCarthy takes that as a starting point, and he tries to unpick what that means for the nature of language. Now, I think there's sort of two things going on in that essay. He's, on the one hand, he's trying to talk about the status of the language for consciousness. I mean, what does it mean to sort of think in language and things like that? And he's also trying to do something very, very paradoxical, which is he's trying to talk about the unconscious, because you can't tell the unconscious what to do, basically, because you can't think about it because it is unconscious.
So you just made an interesting point that it's paradoxical to talk about the unconscious. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I think all sorts of philosophers and thinkers have, you know, have tried to tackle the distinction between, you know, the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. So the conscious mind is basically that of which we are aware, that of which we think. So, I don't know, thoughts, ideas, feelings, emotions, and lots of different philosophers have tried to tackle what is understood by the unconscious. So if you're Friday and you're going to talk about that in terms of desire or drives, if you're, I don't know, if you're a phenomenologist, you might talk about that in terms of you know, habit, or like Merleau-Ponty might do, or you might talk about it in terms of sort of motor intentionality or something like that. You know, you sort of, you know, the idea that that part of the human organism, there's something taking place prior to how we consciously reflect on things. And I think that is, in terms of the context of language, that's what McCarthy is trying to figure out.
Okay. So, I mean, you've mentioned a few different perspectives on the unconscious. Would you be willing to take a stab at what tradition you think McCarthy's broadly coming out of?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, when I talk at the conference, what I've been working on, I think there's a distinct phenomenological element to what McCarthy is talking about. In some way, he seems to be saying that that language is fundamentally geared towards a world, right? So that's kind of a very basic phenomenological point, like. In the same way that sort of Heidegger might talk about it, or Husserl might talk about it, the idea is that sort of all consciousness is consciousness of something, right? So the additional distinction he makes on that then is he says that I think that in some way that the sort of the unconscious is sort of kind of comes from an evolutionary sense, you know, it is something very, very sort of profoundly deep seated within humanity, you know. So in the sense that, like, from the acquisition of language, I think McCarthy says, you know, when we started developing sort of language millions of years ago, so it's not very precise, I know, but he's the unconscious, I think the claim is kind of sort of a survival mechanism that comes prior to that, even from before, you know, the organization of language, and that sort of exists alongside the sort of the conscious acquisition of language that we have. So in some sense, and I mean, he's also quite clear about this. I don't think he's kind of going for some kind of Cartesianism. You know, he's not kind of like a dualist, as the philosophers would say. He's not saying that the sort of mind and matter are two sort of radically exclusive phenomenon, right? It's just that in some sense, how we are aware of things is also attended by this sense that there is much that we are unaware of. We're tied into this deep, profound, what he calls it, Ur language. Is that how you say it? Ur language is like sort of this sort of, you know, primordial language, which is, you know, it comes from like some very sort of profound phenomenon. You could almost sort of think of it like Empedocles or something like that. You know.
So I mean, sorry to interrupt. So just to try and get a bit more, because there's many things about that idea of a language or a primordial language could mean. So is he talking about something like the idea of Indo-European historical language, or is he talking about some sort of deep-seated psychological origin or metaphysical origin of language?
I think the latter would be actually more accurate, yeah. Because, I mean, the Indo-European language is quite localized, obviously, too. But, yeah, so I think the latter. He's talking about some kind of sort of metaphysical origin of language, or he's talking about I think maybe mythological might be more things. Or he kind of get the sense that there's sort of, you know, sort of mythological archetypes that attend our conscious being, right? And that would seem to make sense in the terms of his fiction. Because, I mean, I think one of the things he says in one of his interviews is, like, he says, you know, there's nothing as old as human beings putting one stone on top of another, you know? So that is kind of an evolutionary thing. It's for defense, it's for shelter, it's for the sense of home, it's for the sense of being in the world, right? And his literature is very... I don't want to sort of talk about Jung on this, but, I mean, you could probably go down that road, but, I mean, a lot of his writing is sort of caught up with symbols like fire, water, stone, real, you know, deep elemental sense. Like, so I think that's the basic thesis. I mean, that's very sort of very speculative, I think, at this stage, until we do the workshop on the 26th in Manchester. But the idea is that in some way that we have this, I guess, metaphysical and mythical sense of language that we participate in, which is kind of, in a sense, is almost universal for McCarthy, I think. It's something that transcends local, iterations of language, dialect, accent, things like that.
Okay. I mean, again, well, this is quite cutting edge given how recent the article is.
Yes.
Could I invite you to speculate? So you're someone who spent a lot of time with McCarthy's work. You have already written on him. How has what you're reading in the Kukule problem altered or informed your reading of his fiction, which is obviously the thing that is most prominent?
Well, it hasn't, I guess. Well, I suppose it's, for someone who's interested in the intersection between philosophy and literature in Cormac McCarthy, this is a big moment, I guess, that he's giving a very succinct account of how, well, the nature of the human being in sort of linguistic terms, I guess. So I think what it's done, I guess, is it's probably confirmed my sort of basic hunch that McCarthy is very much attempting in his literature to try and find some sort of the core dimensions of being human.
Okay.
The very, very sort of essential or generic, if you want to call it, in that sense, and in what are they like? I mean, there are those archetypes I already mentioned, home, water, myth, fire, all these things, right? Which are also shorthand for how we are. Also, violence, I think, is something that McCarthy says, he does make a claim in an interview, I think, an interview is called, which is a really interesting read, Cormac McCarthy's Venomous Fiction or something to that effect. But he says that, that sort of violence is the origin of the universe. So in a sense, I think all of those things have sort of been confirmed a little bit more for me, that he is trying to find out some kind of, what are the universal dimensions of being a human being?
I mean, that's almost Heraclitean, isn't it? The sort of...
Yes. What's very interesting about that is that Cormac McCarthy has edited a book by Lawrence Krauss, the scientist.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the copy editor on it, effectively, which is very interesting because it doesn't have much punctuation, Mr. Krauss's book. But
which McCarthy is famous.
McCarthy's famous for not caring about linguistic conventions. I think he's a long hater of the semicolon.
Speaking as a marker, so am I.
Yeah. But what's interesting is that the last chapter of that book is called "What His Character Is Fate."
Okay.
Which is one of Heraclitus' fragments. Mm. And there's a lot of other researchers have written on this link with Heraclitus, that, our life is fate, that idea, that life is necessity, plus the transcendence of necessity. So absolutely, Cormac McCarthy is perhaps even more of a Heraclitian writer than perhaps a Nietzschean writer.
Okay. Why do you think it found its way into a science journal?
Because I think, I don't know the sort of... the ins and outs of it. Interesting, Lawrence Krauss appeared in the same issue of the journal.
Okay.
So that might be a link there. But however, Cormac McCarthy is famously interested in science. So as one of the articles I've written is on the intersection of philosophy, literature, and science in McCarthy's sort of most famous novel, probably The Road. Yeah. So McCarthy, his current status is as well as he's profoundly interested in questions of science and sort of advanced science and physics. Okay. In addition to, being, exceptionally interested in literature and philosophy, which is why we started having this interdisciplinary workshop in Manchester on the 26th.
26th of July.
Manchester. He's profoundly interested in science. And I guess more specifically, he works for, I can't remember the precise name of it. He works for a science institute in Santa Fe, Texas.
Okay.
Right, and that would be one of the reasons why he's so why it appeared in a popular science journal.
Okay. So, Workshops on the 26th of July in Manchester have ended to be confirmed. Registration is open and free.
That is correct.
And that's on the British Society for Phenomenology website, which is britishphenomenology.org.uk. Well, thank you for that very interesting topic, and also for organising the workshop.
You're welcome.